Hey, thanks for tuning in. My name is John Steyer, and if you're watching this, this is Social Echoes from True Woods Media. This is the video for the audio podcast. You can find the audio podcast on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and truevoicemedia.com, and go to resources, and then go to our podcast. Today is episode 24. Anybody watching, as you can see the video, can't remember more. Frank Eliason is our guest. And he's joining us from, I guess, Frank, you're in Jersey, right?
Yes, I am. Right outside Hamilton. Robbinsville is the little town I live in.
Okay. I'm familiar with Hamilton. So those of you who are unfamiliar with Frank's work, Frank is the Senior VP of Social Media at Citibank, which is in New York City. But it's really interesting that you work in the Philadelphia region, which is where you live. How does that work, Frank? I mean, I know a lot of people are doing a lot of different work shifting, and people talk about being able to work from home and being location independent. How does that work for somebody who's running social for such a large brand?
I'm director now of global social media, so even broader.
Oh, even bigger.
Which is, you know, now that it's global, I have a little bit of a benefit of meeting with people around the globe. I don't have a need to always be in the office. That being said, there's certain benefits to those human interactions and to certainly see some people. So I do work from home at times, but I actually go in the office at times, and I travel a lot. So between all of those is a way of getting in contact with people.
So what's the biggest advantage of being able to kind of be so nimble?
You know, it's the world in which we live. I mean, the world's a smaller place now. And so, you know, being able to connect to people easily around the globe is the nature of what's happened in social media. And when you bring that into business, you know, that does bring about certain flexibilities as to where people reside. You know, we don't have to currently hire people just in New York or just in certain areas. We can actually find the best people and work with them wherever they are. You know, so we do. There's a number of people within the organization who actually do that. Now, for myself, while I had a team in New York, I used to travel in all the time. But now that it's more global, I don't have to go in quite as often as I do.
So I read something recently from you that said the best businesses that are kind of equipped for the social world and social business are the ones that are smaller to mid-sized businesses because they're able to be nimble. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting only because the two companies that you've worked for in a large capacity have been, you know, big, beefy brands, Citibank and Comcast. And Comcast Cares is how a lot of people still know you. So what's the do you find it kind of interesting that you've said what you've said, yet you – not that you are a hypocrite for what you're saying, but I just find it fascinating that you kind of have – brought that to everybody's attention.
Sure. And, you know, but it comes down to, I think that people who are trying to win in social media are trying to win in all the wrong ways. You know, they're trying to push some message that no one cares about. They're trying to force feed it into an ecosystem that they're not necessarily welcomed in. Where I look at it, my background in social media started one of the first brands in social media. And one of the things I'll tell you that I find fascinating is back in the day, you know, it wasn't so much about Dell, Starbucks, Comcast, Southwest, H&R Block. It wasn't about them. It was the team at Dell. You know, Richard, Lionel, who just left there. We knew the people. You know, it was Brad Nelson at Starbucks. We knew all the people behind each one of those brands. And, you know, when I look at what people do in social media today, they're still trying to replicate what one of those brands did, whether it be Dell with Dell Outlet, how they did, plus how they handled some of their PR issues, or Starbucks from a marketing perspective. But what they don't understand was that human component behind it. I remember days where Brad Nelson from Starbucks would take the day off and people would blast the people filling in for him. It was a very different time. So one of the reasons I tell people that small and mid-sized businesses are probably much better suited for this is when you get away from the ad component of social media, which, you know, we can debate their effectiveness all day long. When you get away from that and you get to the point where you start thinking about that people component. And the people component tends to scale much better at small or mid-sized companies. You have owners who are extraordinarily passionate for their brand, for the product that they create. They're out there. They'll do it. You know, I always talk about David Alston, who, you know, formerly from Salesforce / Radiant 6. David, when he was with Radiant 6, before anyone really did business with them, he didn't try and sell me in social media. I got to know David for David. We would sit and debate what the future looked like and how people would use this information. That's what it was really about. And when, you know, did I do business with Radiant 6? After that, yes. Why? Because I trusted David. That personal touch is extraordinarily important, that relationship component, who they are. So one of the things that small and mid-sized companies are great at is the owners or the, you know, tend to be really tight with their own customers. They tend to create environments where people want to talk about them and talk with them. I think big companies, you know, it's going to take time. It requires a change. You know, so one of the ways, I don't view myself as a social media guy. I view myself more as a change agent and someone who's striving for deeper, longer term wins. And social media is a huge component to that. My view is, if you want to win long-term in social media, you have to win trust with your customers, you have to win trust with your employees, and you then have to tap into that passion. And you have to build that up. You're not going to get that overnight. So larger companies, it's going to take time to earn that and build that. And also change things. You know, it's not going to be something that's going to change overnight. So, you know, these are things that I think there's potential for large companies, but I think small and mid-sized companies are actually, if they look at it the right way, are already structured for it.
I agree with that. I think what you also were saying echoes a lot of what Ted Rubin talks about with return on relationship. And he was on a couple episodes ago, and I still, every time I hear people discussing ROI and R, I always think of R on R, the hashtag that Ted uses all over Twitter. The other thing that I wanted to ask you, based on what you kind of just went on with, was you said back in the old days. Now, obviously, the old days are, it's not really all that long ago. But when you think about just the maturation process that has gone on in your time in the industry, I mean, I'm curious as to what you think has improved and maybe even what things have kind of taken, just kind of taken a back step, just decayed a little bit.
Well, I think the wrong expectations. I just did a presentation yesterday, and I actually started it off with an apology. And it was an apology to say, I'm sorry, we weren't loud enough. When you look at a lot of us that were speaking back in the early days in social media, you know, we had a message, and the message was not this, you know, oh, you need to go do X. And it wasn't, you know, it was more about the longer term aspects of things, the changing of the way you do business. But I don't think we were loud enough. And what I mean by that is, over time, a number of key players came into existence within social media and started, you know, selling that viral video and the you know, and start selling all kinds of things. Oh, we'll give you the keys to winning the most fans. And I don't think we were loud enough to go, that's not how you win in social media. And so I think we created a bubble. And, you know, by allowing that to happen, I think the excitement got too much. And we had everybody doing all the same stuff that, at the end of the day, not that many cared about. So what I see going on now is companies going, wait, social doesn't pay. Oh, it's not worth it. And it really comes down to, no, you weren't really doing it the right way or for the right reasons. You know, if you do it for the right way and the right reasons, it becomes about relationships and it becomes much more longer term. You were following the excitement. And I think there was a lot of following that way. And I really regret that we weren't loud enough to get people to understand that. And I, you know, I still hear it. I still hear, oh, well, let me give you the recipe for whatever you're going to get. You know, if you buy our product, you're going to get, you know what? It's none of that. If you want to win, you have to win with your customers. You have to win with your employees, and the rest of it it's not really going to get you that much. If you're a bad brand or a bad product, it's, you know, being in social is not going to change that. It's simply going to highlight it, no matter what you say.
Probably one of the first times I've ever heard somebody make an apology that wasn't just strictly for, you know, like sometimes we hear apologies, we see blog posts that are apologies, but they're attention grabbers. That seems to be more than just an attention grabber. Like, it's obviously designed to be attention grabbing, but it's true. Like, what you just kind of spilled your heart out for, like, you know, you had, we had this idea going into it, and yet we may have kind of dropped the ball with an aspect of it. But
actually, we will probably allow others to pick up the ball. It's really what it came down
to.
Sometimes we get caught up in the excitement too. So I think it's, there's a lot of reasons for it. But at the end of the day, if you go back to the original speeches, you know, from people like Gary Vaynerchuk, myself, Tony Hsieh, you know, Chris Brogan, you know, it was all the same thing that we're now getting to today. And we knew it. And I think, you know, we should have gotten loud when others came in and said that they had the magic bullet.
So you think that everybody just kind of got caught up?
Oh, yeah. And I think that, I don't even think that people that, where the bubble is, I don't think everybody sees that yet. I think some people are starting to. And I feel bad because, you know, we're going to see a lot of people backing away from this because they were given wrong advice. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think that, you know, if they were given the right advice, even if they went down the wrong path, but maybe got the right advice, I think they would have been more apt to go, oh, there is longer-term benefits.
Yeah, there was my previous guest with Mitch Joel, and obviously Mitch has an incredible podcast, Six Pixels of Separation. And in his latest episode, which is number 361, I believe, with Jay Baer, and I'm going to forget the other gentleman's name, but they had a discussion about kind of the statistics of social media and what social is doing to bring, you know, actual spend to a company. How are people buying? Are people buying through social? And they're not buying through social, but they're being brought via social to these other channels. And like the conversion number for social was so low that everybody kind of took a step back and was like, no, this can't be it. Because if this is it, then we've been spending five, you know, plus years in something that just doesn't work. And I know Jay kind of defended it. He said, yeah, I understand. I think the data is correct in what it actually presents, but not in the way that we're interpreting it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I hear a lot of what you were saying. Your answer kind of reminded me a lot of that whole discussion that they were having.
Exactly. And Jay and I are actually speaking together in another week or so at an event. And, you know, both of us, similar type message. I think that's why they paired us up. But, you know, it's got to get there, and it's going to get there. I think that, you know, when I look at social media, I look at companies like Apple winning in social media. Yet Apple does very little, but people talk about them. You know, then I look at things like, you know, what really got me into this was probably about a year ago, a firm that does, you know, a tool came out with, you know, a thing against Ryanair, because Ryanair needs to do social servicing, and I pay attention to a lot of the discussion on social servicing. And their point being was that there's all these negative or Facebook pages dedicated to Ryanair. And what I said was, wait a second, if you read every one of those, it's complaints that actually fit up to the brand. Ryanair, you know, they know who they are. I think most companies, unfortunately, don't know who they are. They want to say they're one thing, yet they're something else. And I think that's a problem. You know, Ryanair, if you really look at it, yes, their CEO says some funny quotes, and, you know, I saw one where he was saying that customers are, his one particular customer, but then he broadened it the next time he spoke, is stupid, because they paid for, they didn't print their boarding pass before going to the airport, so they had to pay something like $60 to print their boarding pass. Now, people might say $60 is ridiculous. I do. But you know what? I'm not their customer. I wouldn't be their customer. their customer loves who they are. They want to get the cheapest fare from point A to point B. That's all they want. They want to, everything else is extra. You want to print a boarding pass, it's extra. If you want to get, have a carry-on, it's extra. That's how they do it. And when you look at that company from a metrics perspective, revenue perspective, during the age of social media, they've done extraordinarily well. Even with some of the horrible quotes that the CEOs had. I think at one point there was in social media there was an uproar because they were considering charging to use the bathroom. But you know what? Think about that. Every one of those things lives up to the brand that they are. So who's not winning in social media? That they're winning. And it doesn't require them to do social service because someone doesn't like their fees. I think that's sending a message that they want sent. But the problem is most big companies, most even smaller companies, they want to say one thing and do something else. And I think that's probably the number one issue that companies have to overcome.
So then that brings us to your book in a really nice, organic way. So you just penned a book called At Your Service. And it fits in, obviously, with your kind of even niche in social, which is customer service. And I think sometimes people think of customer service as, there's a complaint and somebody fixes it. But you have a penchant, it seems, for customer service, but more, even more appropriately, customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that come from?
Well, I think that, first of all, the one thing I love about what's going on in social media is it's bringing us to a whole new economic level. I refer to it, it's a relationship economy that we're now in, whether companies realize it or not. We just left an era where it was all about metrics, and now we're entering this new era about relationships. And I'll actually take it even a step further, because maybe it's not relationship economy, maybe it's bringing humanity back, a humanity economy, because we got rid of humanity in pretty much everything we do in business. And I don't think humanity is bad. I think humanity is good. I think people like to be artistic. They like to think through different things. They don't want to be guided into this process that's so rigid that you can't get through things. So I think that's exciting to be entering that. My background, we're all a product of our history. And my history is in customer service. My first job outside of retail. So I worked in retail management for a number of years. But first job, actually, I guess my second job, I had one job where I got laid off after 3 months. Greatest job ever. First package for working 3 months. Loved it. But after that company, I went and worked for Vanguard Investments. And Vanguard is an amazing company to work for. And they're owned by the people that own their funds. So they're very customer driven. And, everything they do is customer driven. Everybody up to their CEO takes calls. It's a very interesting atmosphere. And so being a product of that history, Vanguard was a very special history to me. And it really brought out that customer centricity aspects. And then when I went to work for other companies, I found that's not always the same elsewhere. I started taking things I learned there and certainly utilizing it to try and bring people up to that customer experience level. And and that wasn't always that important to companies, but what I'm noticing, thanks to social media, is now companies are really starting to focus on customer experience. And, it's been highlighted. Social media has highlighted to the world, but especially the leaders in companies, that their customer experience is broken. And so it takes someone to actually educate those leaders as to what is broken and how to fix it. I like to view things with the customer hat on at all times. Do I understand business? Absolutely. Do I understand businesses are there to make money? Absolutely. But I also understand the perceptions that they sometimes create with their customers. And most of those are not things that were intended. So in the book, I talk a lot about connect the dots between all of this. I try and connect the dots between how your customer experience or the way you interact with the customer, how it impacts your overall brand. But I also then try and take it down to how it works in business and how the pass it down the lane within business actually, usually doesn't get the intent. You know, oh, we have to change this process because we need to do this. As it gets passed down the lane, it becomes a very rigid, can't break from that. And that's not necessarily the intent of the leader who said that. So I try and represent, here's what really goes on in that world. And I'm very hopeful. Towards the end of the book, I actually talk about the chief customer experience officer or chief customer officer. And I'm a very big believer that companies need that. They don't have it today. If you look at companies, it's funny. We have, general counsel or chief attorney, we have the chief operating officer. We have the chief marketing officer, chief communications officer. We have advice getting to the CEO on all kinds of levels, but we tend to fail to miss one key component to that customer advice. How does your customer see this? Yes, I understand where the CFO wants to keep finances in check, and the general counsel wants to keep the company from getting sued and do so in a safe manner. But you know what? Someone has to represent the customer viewpoint, because all those views are extraordinarily important. And then as the CEO, you then need to take all these pieces of that puzzle to make your best educated decision. And so I think that needs to get a seat at the table. Now, where that seat's going to come from, there's going to be a lot of debate over that. I hear the same debate in social media. Who should own social media? And I used to hear, should it be marketing? Should it be PR? And I used to joke, should it be customer service? And I wasn't really joking. The fact is, it's important for that organization to step it up. But if they don't step it up, someone else will, because people are recognizing the shift going on. And, let's face it, human nature, you recognize the shift going on, you want to capitalize on it. So people are trying to step up to the plate and take ownership over that. Where in the past, which is really funny, the customer service departments and customer experience, that was the bastard stepchildren in companies. And now people are going, wait, I want that. I want a piece of that. So I think that it's going to have to change. And I call on customer service and customer experience people. They need to step up to the plate. But I also think that, it would be great for customer service and customer experience people to learn from departments like marketing. I think marketers do an outstanding job in an organization educating senior leaders as to the importance of them, their organization. And I think that's been what's been lacking in companies, is people that run service departments tend to look down on themselves. They kind of view themselves as a cost center. We're going to become the sales center. And those call centers, because you call up and you need help and they go, let me sell you this. And you're like, no, I want help with this. That's those centers. And that's because their leader said, I'm going to justify my job. We'll become a sales center. Stupid. What you need to do, they need to have confidence who they are and what they are. It's our role to build a relationship with these customers. It's our role to make these customers want to do business with us. And you can demonstrate that if done properly. So I think they, in many ways, service and experience people need to have marketers teach them how to manage that upward and how to show the value that they bring to the organization, because I think that's been lacking in that business for a long time. And either they're going to do it or their customers are going to demand it.
So do you think that maybe that the community managers from social, can they be maybe one of the liaisons for the customer experience?
They can actually drive it more than most people. What I try and educate people is, I have a background in numbers. I know numbers extraordinarily well, but I also know what happens with numbers. People glare over them. When Six Sigma and all that type of measurements came out, everything was about dashboards. Well, now we have so many metrics on anything. You put a metrics in front of someone's desk, and unless the company's losing money, no one notices it. The way you really want to drive change is you drive change through stories. So what I would stress to community managers everywhere, you're already trying to tell your brand story externally. Why don't you tell that external story internally? Learn to tell the story. As you tell that brand story, you can actually drive change very easily. Here's the perception of the brand, and share it. If you do that, you can drive change in the largest of organizations. And, you know, people wonder where the ROI is in social media. If you start actually, you know, sharing that and sharing it upward, and you start paying attention to all the improvements that happen, all of a sudden, you'll have ROI really fast. And it's all because you're simply listening to what was out there and sharing it in an effective manner. While I was at Comcast, we did a daily newsletter, and it was done in a story format to help get people to drive change. I was in a department that was an important department, but it had to influence a lot of other departments. And anybody that's ever done influence management, they know, you know, one of the ways you can go about doing that is showing the story, sharing a story with all those areas, and, you know, not necessarily doing it where you're dictating anything. Here's the story. I'll make it up. Here's where I get it from. And that drives huge change, and there's ROI right in that. So, what I would urge to community managers is know that you have your brand story thrown at you every single day, good, bad, and ugly. Learn to express it. Learn to share it.
I think one of my favorite brands, I've talked a lot about them on the podcast before, is Chipotle, and they have done a very good job of kind of their community managers being liaisons to the key decision makers. Mm-hmm. So there's a big push in farming and getting back to organic foods and labeling GMOs, and the Chipotle consumer base is very educated on that and kind of pushing and asking these questions. So Chipotle is one of the first large chains to actually label GMOs on their website and also in their stores. I think that at least that's what they're trying to do. So there is, I think, one of my favorite examples of what community managers can do with the kind of the data that is given back to them in storytelling form. You know, like people are saying, like, I love your company, I love what you do, but also I have this concern. And they take that and they bring it back to the people that, you know, take care of the buying decisions or give whatever information is on the website. So I would think that kind of echoes exactly what you were just speaking about.
Mm-hmm. And I think longer term, you know, where I see it being is not necessarily even community managers in the future. You know, it's every employee. You know, all your employees are in social media. If you change how you do business and you give that way for them to connect to those people, they can actually help with that story in their own networks and become extraordinarily trusted source for both the business as well as for their customers. So from a longer term perspective, that is how social media even scales.
So Frank, before I let you go, you are a local guy. You're from Philadelphia area. You went to high school at Archbishop Wood. And I have two cousins that graduated from Archbishop Wood a couple years ago. Didn't you just have a couple running backs from Wood get, signed by D1 colleges?
I believe so, but I actually haven't paid as much attention. Although on Facebook, I do a lot of my friends from high school are all my friends. You know, I still don't understand that about Facebook. How, like, you know, it always get all these people from high school in my 40s at this point. You know, but they're all there, so they do share a lot of that stuff. I just haven't paid attention.
It's okay. I was only asking simply because I went to Lansdowne Catholic, so I'm on the other side of the suburban kind of chain, and it just seems interesting that every time you look at the football scores during the fall, it always was Archbishop Wood just annihilating another team, even some of the bigger city school teams.
It wasn't that way when I was there.
It certainly is now. So what else? Let me just ask you real quick. How do you see the Philadelphia scene of social media? Like, is there anything that kind of makes you feel like there's going to be some sort of social revolution here?
Actually, the scene itself is extraordinarily active, but it's kind of separated. There are, like, various social media groups that get together. I know there's, you know, Bucks County one I used to go with in Doylestown, and there's Philadelphia, a few Philadelphia area ones, someone South Jersey one. That all being said, the community itself is fairly active. What I'd like to see it, though, is get more active in innovation and really being, you know, into change. I think it's a great environment. For those that don't know the Philadelphia area, it is just a great area to live. You're so close to history. You're so close to arts, entertainment. So close to New York and DC, and you know it's such a phenomenal area to live. But I would love to see a revitalization of the Philadelphia region to be much more tech savvy than they are. I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. There's a lot of great educated people in the area, and I would love to get them to stay in the area after their education, which there was definitely a challenge to that for a while in Philadelphia. And so if we could do that, you know, technology could thrive in that area and bring about true innovation. So, you know, that's what I'd like to really see happen. I would take it even away from social and just go, you know, that's where, you know, the focus has to go. We already have, you know, in the area a number of pharmaceutical firms, but, you know, and some biotech firms. But beyond that industry, you don't see much of it. And I think there's huge opportunity to do it. And I think the East Coast in general is craving it.
I agree. And I think that there's a lot of really great people that, especially Gloria Bell, who's a friend of True Voice Media. She's doing a lot of great stuff with getting young high school girls to learn how to code and different things. And it's something that I'm really, really happy to see that more and more people are calling for innovation here. Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful thing because I'm the same way. You know, I want this area to succeed, and I see a lot of incredible potential. So. Frank, thank you so much for joining us here on Social Echoes. Before you head out, let people know where they can, number one, get the book, and number two, be social with you.
So, well, first of all, thank you for having me. And, you know, getting a hold of me is easy. I don't have business cards. I always tell people I'm the social guy. So my Twitter handle is at Frank Eliason. That's probably the easiest way. But people can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm also on the influencer network of LinkedIn. So I write some articles there for LinkedIn Today. So you can see some of my latest writings there. I have a blog at frankeliason.com, but I'll be the first to admit I don't write as much as I used to. Most of my writing today is being done on either LinkedIn or on social media today. You know, I'm also on Facebook and a number of Google Plus, so pretty much everywhere. And, you know, I'm always open to connect with people and always open to have a conversation with people. I think, you know, we are in interesting times. And I think one of the things I'd urge people, though, is in these times, in these changing environment of communications, you know, we tend to get really locked into our views on things. Start being open to hearing the other side. I know we all say we're open to it, but I watch a lot of discussions in social media, and we oftentimes get very angry at the other side. And so I would urge everyone to be respectful of other views. You know, whether you may disagree with them, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with disagreement. But just be respectful of the people. You know, stop, you know, if someone doesn't agree with you, you know, or people with that view are stupid and they deserve, you know, stop that. You know, we have to find ways to get along. This new communication is going to make it much harder when those views differ. And so we have to encourage a spirit of openness and that it's okay to disagree on things. Otherwise, it takes away from the fun that the space has. It also takes away from the ability to learn from others. I learn so much from people with different views than I do. So I love to be open to them. But, you know, I noticed it during the political season, and I kind of chalk that up to being the political season. But you know what? I've noticed it a lot more since then, and it seems to be growing as opposed to dissipating. So I worry very much for us as a society unless we can get to the point that it is acceptable for others to have differing views and not necessarily blast them because of those views.
See that, America? Philadelphia can be nice. We can play nice. We can encourage other people to play nice, too.
And we usually did, except for unless you're wearing a different team's jersey, but that's a whole other conversation.
Absolutely. Well, Frank, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That'll do it for Social Echoes. My name is John Steyer. As always, you can find us on socialechoespodcast.com. Go to iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and search Social Echoes. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.